Thank you, Denise, for joining me to talk about women and thought leaderships and books. You have done so much over the course of your career to support women as entrepreneurs and as thought leaders and as authors. So I'm really honored that you're going to take the time to talk with me here. Thanks.
Happy to be here.
So I've read your book, Ready to Be a Thought Leader. And I want to talk with you a little bit about the story of that book, because when you've written it, you were already doing essentially thought leadership coaching. Would that be an effective or correct thing to say?
Yeah, I call it thought leadership consulting.
Thank you.
Yes, I was.
Through the Thought Leadership Lab. And so then you wrote the book. And let me just ask you, and you know, I kind of know the answer because I read your book, but what were you hoping to achieve with the book? You know, because writing a book is not an insignificant endeavor.
And, you know, I think one of the things that for anybody writing a book, you have to have some driving reason, something that's going to keep you going, because it does take a while to get a book out. And for me, it was the importance for me of telling a few of the stories that I tell in the book, the story that I begin with about my client, Vantoon Quinlivan, another story of a thought leader that I was very impressed with that I wanted to share her story, Zoe Dunning. And I think that was the first main reason that probably kept me going, is that these stories needed to be told. I think the second for me was that I was writing a story to my younger self. I was writing a story to that gal who was setting out on this journey unbeknownst to herself that she was going to become a thought leader, right? And if I'd only known and had something that could have guided me on my path, it was all hit and miss. It was all stumble and pick yourself up and try something different. And, you know, good fortune that I was in a forgiving market space where I was in a time when my voice was needed and people were ready to hear it. But if I had had the book that I was able to finally write a few years later, I would have A, stumbled less, B, been more confident, and C, gone much further, much faster than I did. And that's really what I wrote it for, is how could I help others, particularly women, executives, entrepreneurs, leaders, change makers, to have those tools at their fingertips.
Right. So you wrote the book that you needed, needed previously, right?
I did.
Yeah, that's great. And so the act of writing the book, so you had actually been consulting and speaking on this subject already. So you in many ways consulted your way into the deep knowledge and expertise that you get. Did you find that writing the book as well crystallized it differently?
Very much so. I had my own journey becoming a thought leader. Then I got hired to consult with my first client, who's the one who's on the first page. And that sort of catapulted me into this new conversation on how people can use their expertise to change the conversation, how they can be change agents that are not just making change in one organization, but driving change more systemically. And yet, what I thought I knew when I began the book and what I knew by the end of the book were very different. First of all, like you, I was out interviewing a lot of people. My own consulting practice grew over the time that I was working on this book. And third, writing a book forces you to codify frameworks and distill step by step, which honestly is the journey of a thought leader. So it's always been so funny because now people call me a thought leader about thought leadership, which is a very meta kind of concept, right? But the idea of being a thought leader is to force yourself to think, how can others come along behind me? How can others follow in my footsteps? And so it was in the process of writing the book that I really understood that more deeply and was able to codify what I knew in a way so that others could do that.
Yeah, that's great. And what you just said there, you said something that's, you know, the process of becoming a thought leader is saying, you know, is analyzing and thinking about that. I think sometimes people feel that they need to already be a thought leader before they step out and write a book. And it's like, so how do you be one? I don't know. I'm not one of the people who was granted, you know, I didn't come out of the womb a thought leader, right? I mean, I'm just...
No one anointed me along the way somewhere, right?
Right. We were waiting for a gatekeeper to tell us, hey, it's okay, you know. And those gatekeepers, you know, we are our gatekeepers, I guess. So a lot of the examples you give are women. You obviously started the Forum for Women Entrepreneurs. Do you find that it's different getting women to step into the role of thought leadership than it is for men?
I think it isn't so much men versus women. I think it's dominant culture versus non-dominant culture. So for example, if you are looking in the tech industry where the dominant culture is white male, even men of color will find that their voice, honoring and respecting and having the confidence to use their voice, is a challenge. For women, there are many more places where we are the not dominant culture. But I don't want to ever say that this is necessarily a men versus women. And honestly, I would say there are certainly men who are needing to step into their expertise in a broader way, which is why this book has become so popular, that this is not a, and you know, just for those people who are behind or left out or any of that. It's really for any of us, particularly those who are change agents, who need to understand these steps, you know, who begin to realize that the change they're making in one organization, one community, one company could be have a broader impact. And that's people of every color, race, age, background, description.
Yep. That's such a good way to frame it. It's whether or not you feel like you are part of the dominant culture of the industry or the area that you're in really does affect how you feel about stepping up and saying something, right?
Yeah, and being trusting in that people want to hear you happens more likely if you're of the dominant culture, right? Of course people want to hear me. I'm just like everybody around me versus I'm nothing like anyone around me. Does anyone want to hear me? And I think that's the part of why this skill set is all the more important for those who are in that type of structure.
Yeah. So tell me about how the book has been received and what the experience it has been of having that book go out into the world.
I think the thing about books that I had no way of knowing, Anne, is that they're like magic. It's a lot of work. It's a heck of a journey. All of that is true. And once your book is out in the world, the opportunities that have presented themselves for me have been really, I couldn't describe it as anything other than magic, because not only have I felt that have had the opportunity to feel that I'm making a difference and having an opportunity for people to gain skills that they've always wanted or never even knew they wanted, but now that they have them. So I get love letters from people, I get connections on LinkedIn from people all around the globe on every day, pretty much. I get, you know, people reaching out for, speaking and for the opportunity to do a course on LinkedIn Learning and then a second course on LinkedIn Learning, to all the doors that have opened, all the people that have come to me to tell me their story or how I helped them or how you know, they underline every page of the book or they have sticky notes on every page or the yellow highlighted the whole thing and then they had to get another copy. You know, the funny things that you hear, you just, you know, what a wonderful thing that is, because I did work hard on this book and it was several years of my coming to understanding and then iterating to get a book that I was proud of, and, you know, some procrastination and some fear and some doubt and all of that stuff wrapped up. I mean, I don't want to say this was a smooth shot the day I decided to do a book all the way to the book. No, it was a journey of my own. So to see that impact makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, you know, you are someone who is wanting to instigate change and here you are doing it with your book. And again, it's the meta experience of being a thought leader about thought leadership.
Yeah, it's a huge gift for me as well as for others. And that's what I love.
Yeah. And so you speak on this topic as well, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a platform about this beyond the book. And I know you're doing some other things in healthcare now, too. So you were a multifaceted individual. But you tell me about what else you are doing on this thought leadership training. And
so the book has gone into many different places. So I had an opportunity to teach at Stanford Business School a first of its kind course in thought leadership called Introduction to Thought Leadership. It was about communicating for credibility, and co-taught it with a longtime instructor there who just had such a great experience. You know, just even learning, I am a graduate of the business school, and so to be on the other side was really fun, but the students are just you know, really smart, dedicated, gung-ho types, some of whom were honestly bigger thought leaders than I will probably ever be in their fields already before they came to the class. And then watching them just even go further, that was huge. I was able to create a course on MentorBox, which has gotten a lot of positive feedback. I have a new opportunity with a new venture-funded organization that's creating sort of a LinkedIn learning, but for an audio courses. So I'll be one of their first instructors on that, right? Plus I was had a lot of articles that were done from my book, you know, taking subsets of the book and turning them into articles that others did and some that I did. So it's also had a broad outreach. And then I've been able to work with different organizations, like there's a group that specializes in consultants. And so we did an ebook on thought leadership for consultants. So, you know, opportunities like that have come. So there's been a lot of ways. And let me step back a step and say that, you know, when my book first came out, I invited a group of women friends of mine who are just all powerhouses, and I invited them to an afternoon. I provided this lovely setup and wine and this beautiful room, and we put white sheets of paper on every wall and post-it notes all over, and I invited them to come and join me to have a conversation about how could I create 10,000 women thought leaders. That was my goal, right? That was in 2014. And I literally, just this past weekend, was cleaning out my closet, and I found some of those pages that I had saved from all that long time ago, right? And just seeing some of the ideas that we had, we created this big map of sort of looking from, if we had thought, okay, here we are at 10,000, what would have had to have happened before that, and then what would have to happen for entrepreneurs, what would happen for executives. So I had all these brilliant women giving me all these great ideas about how to scale my ideas, and to look back now and say, I think I'm well beyond 10,000 women thought leaders now, right? Just there's been 100,000 people who've taken my course on LinkedIn.
Wow.
You know, the book is a bestseller. It's done very well over many years. So you think, I thought 10,000 seems so ambitious and so,
yes,
like, what, right? And now I look back and think, hey, where's the 1 million, right?
Yeah.
I think that's also what I love, is that this book has pushed me. This book has galvanize me to think even bigger, and that's what I want for my clients, my friends, those who I wrote the book for. But I also love that it's also for me.
That's so cool! What a great story to come back and find this time capsule. It's like, oh yeah, because 10,000 seemed like a big number when you first published, right?
It absolutely did. Now it's like, really? Did that a couple years ago.
That's great. And you had, I have to say, a little fun thing. You had Guy Kawasaki write your foreword, which is nice little start to a book,
right? Yeah. He's been a champion of mine in the past. He was, when I started the Forum for Women Entrepreneurs, he was just starting one of his organizations, and he offered me free office space. So for several years, I had this beautiful space in downtown Palo Alto. So when I was writing the book, of course, he was the first person I reached out to and asked if he would do the foreword, and he was kind enough to do so.
That's great. I have to tell you, his book, he had a book about writing a book, author, publisher, entrepreneur, which inspired me to write my first book. So
isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And I love his book Enchantment too, because Enchantment ties a lot to what we're talking about here. I mean, you do need to have that skill set to be effective as a thought leader. So I often tell people, like, get his book as a good tie-in to mine here, because I think those skill sets are intertwined.
Yeah, that's great. So the book, you know, took on a life, created this platform, and that has enabled you to reach so many people even beyond the book, which is the LinkedIn courses, the, you know, speaking, all of these things. Do you think the book was a catalyst for that?
I was already a speaker, and I was already a professional speaker by the time the book came out, but I'll tell a little story on myself. I remember I was a member of the National Speakers Association, and early before the book came out, and I remember going to an early event, and these women, I was standing at the cocktail table, and they were asking me, what do I speak on? And I said, I speak on leadership. And they're like, well, yeah, but what? And I said, well, women's leadership. And they said, well, okay, but what? And I had nothing, right? I didn't understand the importance of a niche. And here it is, the first chapter of the book a few years later was the importance of having a niche, right? So I think to myself, yes, I was a professional speaker, but was I anywhere ready for prime time? Probably not. You know, the fact that people were paying me back then is more of a kindness. I think now I have a real, I have a specialty in an area of expertise, which is what I want for everyone. And I want you to have it in a way that your particular perspective and your particular successes in whatever you've done are codified in a way that is allowing you to galvanize change. And that is way better than just being a speaker who can get up and talk about sort of general topics. You know, really having something you own, then the phone rings, right? And then they want to talk to you, not just because, you know, you're some leadership speaker. So I think that this is a journey that I needed to be on, and the book pushed me much faster. And I always tell other women authors and anyone who's really trying to create that voice is you can't create a voice talking about everything, right? You can't be a generalist and be followed, right? It's much more important than ever, especially with this crowded market space and all the different people and all the different mediums, to find a place and at least for a time stick to it. It doesn't mean it'll be the only thing you ever speak on for the rest of your life, right? But if you have an area of expertise, now people have a place to put you in their head, right? Everybody needs to put you in a box. So now you're the box of thought leadership. And maybe it is built, in my case, on a box of she's an expert in women's entrepreneurship. But now this is sort of me, that's my second box. And my more important work for the future is this thought leadership piece.
Yeah. I think it's so that advice about finding your niche is something that's so problematic to a lot of people. And yet it's so important. And that's a conversation that I keep having with different authors, and we're getting lots of different takes on it. One of is like, don't decide your niche until you've been engaging with the market and people kind of tell you. Some of the times the world tells you what your niche is if you're listening, you know, which is
just like starting a company. I always tell people, don't start a company just because you feel like starting a company. Figure out what people are already calling you and willing to pay you to do, and then start that company. You know, I've started many companies in my career, and the only one I ever did that it wasn't like that was a huge failure, right?
Yeah.
Every other one was perfectly successful because people were already willing to pay me for that.
Yes. Yeah. That's the key, right? That's it. Pay attention to what people are asking you for and, you know, responding to and all of that.
Yeah. And double down, right? Really get clear that you do have a particular way of doing whatever it is. Like what people tend to do is when they're writing a book, for example, they tend to say, well, I just was on with a client this past week, you know, and she was saying, well, you know, but my process is like everybody's process. I said, okay, well, you know, you work in a company of how many people? She said, I don't know, 100,000. I said, okay, how many people just in your division? She says 10,000. I said, okay, how many people in your division can do what you do? She said, 2. Okay, so what we need to do is not that you're doing what everybody's doing. We need to distill what you do, particularly to be one of those two. Like, what is your secret sauce and what is your particular way of approaching things? And it isn't generic. Once you start to peel away, like, how did you do it and how did people respond and what was your tactics and what were the words, like literally looking for even the words you're using, which are not generic. You know, you're not saying the same thing that everyone is saying. And that's what I always try to do with people is, you know, thinking about even how you create a chapter title. It shouldn't just be, you know, next step is X, right? It's like, yeah. How can you make that something that's yours? And there's even a section, I think I interviewed my mentor, Sam Horn, and quoted her in the book because she's so good at this. And, you know, how do you codify it, steps in a way that you can put a trademark on? That is her sweet spot. And so I didn't want to pretend that I had learned this on my own. Of course, I wanted to go to the expert, and she really is.
Yeah. I've met Sam. She's wonderful. Heard her talk. I just am a huge fan as well. Yeah. So this is something that people run into, or I hear people say, it's like, there's already a book on my topic. What would you say to someone who said that to you, Denise? It's like, but Denise, there's a book on my topic.
And I say, when I started writing my book, I went on Google and I Googled how many books on leadership were there. I don't remember the number, but it was so big that I easily could have just crawled into my bed and forgotten the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? So I do think it was important for me to differentiate. The second thing is the words thought leadership were really misused at the time that this book came out, right? People hated that phrase. And many people still do, you know? So it is important. I even had to start the book by explaining, like, what do I mean by thought leader? And then I had to define it in a way that I thought was unique enough that people could see I wasn't talking about just getting yourself on Twitter and saying how fabulous you are and talking about what you had for lunch, right? This was important to actually differentiate your, not just that you're an expert, but that you're an expert that is going to show the way. So I the way I talk about it now that I didn't really define as clearly in the book is that leaders are one to many. Most of the people they're leading, they see on a regular basis, but thought leaders are many to many. And what's different is if you need to get other people to pick up your ideas and carry them forward to their communities, that's actually a different skill set, right? You can push and pull on the people that you that report to you or that you have some influence over or that know you and trust you. But to get people to pick up those ideas and carry them to someone else, that takes an ability to distill messaging, to craft how-tos, to create blueprints and frameworks. That is a different set of skill sets. And once people could see that that's what I meant by thought leader, then okay, then it wasn't just those, they couldn't just dismiss this anymore as something that everyone could do, because the truth is, it is hard to be a thought leader, and it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen, I mean, it can happen by accident, for me it was completely by accident, but I do think that if you apply yourself and you do put a number of new tools in your toolkit, you're going to be all the more effective, and that's what, when I could get people to see that, then that they could let go of that old framing of thought leader and adopt and accept and be excited about the new one, which is what I was trying to do. And that's what everyone needs to do for their niche. Okay, yes, there's a million books on whatever topic it is, but how can you differentiate either with your the definition or the process you're using or the way you describe it or the way you message and allow others in, the way you create community, the way you amplify ideas of others, all of those differentiate you and the way you're approached. And then I'll add one last piece, and that is that often my voice is going to be accepted by someone who may not be excited to hear from someone else on that very same topic. So my clients, you know, an Indian woman, a senior executive is going to have a different audience than someone who doesn't look and talk and have her background and expertise. And so I want to encourage her to get her voice out because there's a whole bunch of people who have no one speaking to them or speaking for them. And that's what thought leaders really are about. We are speaking on behalf of others. So thinking for yourself as you're figuring out your topic, who are you speaking on behalf of? And what voice do they need to hear? And how come there's 1,000 books? Because there's 1,000 audiences.
That's great. That's such a great way of putting it. You know, not only who are you serving, but who are you speaking on behalf of? I mean, that's a wonderful way to put it. And that's why we need to encourage people to step up and go through this journey and figure it out. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Nisa.
You're so welcome.
Continue to guide and inspire all kinds of people. So thank you for that.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Anne.